Welcome to the Ask Sensei Tony podcast, where Sensei will address your questions about life from a cosmic perspective. Please subscribe and ask a question at AskSenseiTony.com to find out more about studying with Sensei privately, becoming a part of our spiritual community, and training to become a mindful minister of oneness in our seminary. We hope you enjoy this episode and find it helpful.
The thing that's really useful about that model is, you know, we call it reorientation practice, is when you realize that the human being, you know, if you think of the human being as not having an inherent good or bad, then you get to choose existentially what you believe the human being is about. And so in our model, we consciously and intentionally define ourselves, our inherent sense of self, as Buddha. And by Buddha, we mean clarity, creativity, and connection. And traditionally, that was talked about as Buddha Dharma Sangha. And so that's where we kind of start from. And that reorientation, then, it means that we start from the world of being. And in that way, nothing we do, good or bad, by people's interpretation or even our own, defines who we are. That's very important. We're no longer defined by our doing and having. The definition of who we are inherently is a choice we make about ourselves. And from our perspective, choosing to believe that I have an inherent value and worth that is complete. And nothing I do in life will add to that. And nothing I can do in life will subtract from it. That there's a very pragmatic result from adopting that view. And then we're not getting rid of the world of doing and having. We're just shifting our orientation so that we go to the world of being first and then into the world of doing and having. And by doing that, we free ourselves up in a dramatic way. A radical way, if you will, because we can actually look at our behaviors non-judgmentally and determine whether or not those behaviors are helping us, whether they're creating suffering for us, whether they're creating suffering for other people. And that's what I was saying before, why this non-dualistic view doesn't lead you into some sort of, well, nothing matters, you know, nihilism. Not quite the contrary to that. It causes you to go very deeply into what you might mean by a particular action and how that action might be interpreted by others. And like I say, what it does is it frees you up to actually try to learn something from it. And you don't have to defend who you are anymore. You don't have to defend your actions, because your actions, you realize, are made up of two qualities. One is a lot of our actions we really don't have much control over, because we're so conditioned to behave in certain ways and react in certain ways that a lot of what we do comes from a very unconscious place. And some of that's based on our evolutionary history, some of it's based on our personal conditioning. And that doesn't mean that we can't have a sense of responsibility. In fact, in, you know, the Dragonfly Sangha, the spiritual community that I created, one of our precepts is I take complete responsibility for my own life and my own action. But taking responsibility for my own life and my own action doesn't mean necessarily that, or ipso facto, that means that I'm responsible for everything that happens. And again, that's where we distinguish between intention and unintentional with regard to hurt and pain or hurt and harm, rather. And that hurt is unintentional for us, harm is an intentional thing. And we have these practices in Buddhism there's three called the three precepts for clarity. Sometimes they're called the three pure precepts in traditional language. And there's a lot of different ways to interpret them. But the way I interpret them, the way we do it, the Dragonfly song is, if I'm going to do something, if I have the time to think about what I'm going to do, because sometimes we don't, sometimes we react to things. But if I'm going to respond to something, then the first thing I ask is it my intention to cause harm here? I really kind of investigate that. And if I can answer no to that, like, no, it's not my intention to cause harm, then I can go to the second precept, which is, will this somehow enhance my being? And if I can say yes to that, then I go to the third one, which is, will this somehow enhance the being of another? And if I can answer positively to the yes, then I can go and do that action without any any hesitation. And that doesn't mean that I have control over the outcome of those actions, because some people might interpret what I interpret as being helpful as harmful, and some people might interpret enhancement of being as the opposite for them. So that's again where people kind of have their opinions and they project from their own perspective and conditioning. But I have to free myself from that. I can't be living out of somebody else's ideas about that, credo about that. I have to work out of my own. That's all I can take responsibility for, is really how I believe. And because my belief will affect my thoughts, and my thoughts will then affect my feelings, and those feelings will affect my actions, whether they be of a passive or assertive nature. So when you're coming from this non-dualistic perspective, the human being, it just comes out of the science of anthropology. And in my experience, human beings are capable of great acts of kindness and compassion, and they're capable of great acts of harm and hate. I think it's pretty self-evident. But what I have found too from this practice is that if I am working with someone who, has made mistakes or has done some things that have been harmful to others or created suffering, then I want to work with that person and help liberate them from the belief that then because of this, they're inherently bad or they're inherently evil. I think that's pretty clear. And there's a deeper element here too that I want to touch on a little bit. It's a big subject. But real practice is not so much about light as much as it is about shadow. And I would say that one of the main earmarks of a good spiritual path is that it causes you to face your shadow. Well, the word shadow is a term that comes out of transpersonal psychology, and it can be interpreted a lot of different ways, but essentially it means the things that have not been integrated into your life. That's our perspective on it. And in our one mindfulness model in the four direction system, we do what's called the projection model, and we talk about the shadow as being actually very, very close to the source, because it's kind of our first experience. And so the irony is that when you learn to face your shadow, that can seem very dark and maybe even evil. And people are sometimes shocked at sometimes the monster that they find hiding behind. Blue eyes. And actually, what creates a lot of our disease and anxiety in life is that we have this model of ourselves, the good, and and then we see the not so good, or the darker, whatever you want to say, and that ambiguity we can't live with, and so that triggers a lot of obsessive behavior. My experience as a pastoral counselor, that triggers this obsessive and then compulsive behavior, because we really can't deal with the ambiguity. And see, that's where a non-dualistic perspective allows us to embrace the ambiguity. And what we find by really digging into our shadow and really understanding it, that there's really nothing to fear. And that the shadow actually has a lot to teach us, and it's actually, in a strange way, it's the source of our grace. Because in the shadow, everything is accepted. Everything is. And so what we see as darkness is really liberation, because we experience it as just this acceptance. And that's how the shadow aspect of our being can be transformed. And then it becomes kind of a protector of us. And in the Buddhist tradition, the shadow is often, sort of personalized. Like in the story of Shakyamuni Buddha, Mara sort of stands in for his shadow. Sort of Mara is kind of like a Scythian devil, or I don't know how you want to think about it, but sort of like Satan in the New Testament, or the Christian scriptures with Christ. But Buddha sees Mara as his shadow, and Mara's with him all his life. And it's not like Mara goes away. When you get into like the traditional Buddhist practices of like Vajrayana, Tibetan Buddhism, for example, then there's the practice what they call Yidam. And Yidam is kind of a archetype of the unconscious, and the shadow version of that is then converted from this sort of dark demonic force into this protector being called the Dharmapala. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's it, you see. Because when you can embrace your shadow, when you can integrate that, not just the good, but the bad and the ugly, so to speak, and you do it in a way that is harmonious for you, because that's part of it. You're employing the ego self. The ego self is not the enemy. The ego self is that which is transmogrified by the true self. And part of that transmogrification is the ego self channeling the true self in all the aspects of the unconscious mind. And when you do that, you realize that in that shadow, that spot, that place, everything's accepted, because that's the place of the monsters. That's the place of the darkness. So that there's nothing that's not accepted there. It accepts the unacceptable. And you really get to this understanding that the way to do this is to embrace the unembraceable. I mentioned my friend, the great Roy James Dio. And there was a song off of, he got back together with the guys from Black Sabbath, Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler, and not Bill Ward, Vinny Appice was on the drums. And wow, I really dig them. And I got to see Ronnie, in his last days, really just enjoying that experience with them again. And then he has a song called The Devil Cried. And it's about this soul in hell who, you know, wants to get out of it. And so, you know, there's a bunch of lyrics in there, but at the very end, this soul realizes it's his chance. And so he goes to the devil and he tells the devil of all his troubles and what he's been through. And the devil laughs, you know. And you know, I wonder what that laugh's about. You know, is that laughter at the person? Or is the devil laughing because he's heard this story before? And then this person says, I love you. Tells the devil, I love you. And then the devil cried. Tears of fire. And that song, which sometimes I'll do, one of these days I'm going to do a conversation on that. Incredible, mythic, psychological insights that you find in metal. That's it, you know. You learn to embrace the unembraceable. You learn to love the unlovable. You learn to forgive the unforgivable. Man, that's grace. When you're accepted as you are without one. That's grace, man. And so it is by confronting and integrating and loving our shadow that we go beyond fear. And the shadow is transformed into the goal, the alchemical goal, you know, that gives life. That has the inherent. So, I hope that was helpful, Chris. As you know, I can't give you a simple answer because, you know, life's not really simple. You know, I mean, there are things about life that's very simple. My father used to say, life's not that hard, we just make it hard, you know. It's actually pretty simple. And I think I would agree with him in part in the sense that, you know, it's pretty straightforward. But the human psyche is profoundly, profoundly cosmic. So I hope you found that useful. Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask Sensei Tony. Please visit our website at AskSenseiTony.com. Check out Sensei's books and videos, and become a part of the Dragonfly spiritual lifestyle.